providing an overview of what's taking place in Massachusetts regarding the implementation of the dual eligible demonstrations project in our state. But first, I'd like to give you a little overview of what's taking place in terms of healthcare in Massachusetts. Massachusetts is undertaking a payment reform initiative that's going through our legislature right now. And it's important to mention that because what happens with that payment reform system will affect how ACA is implemented, as well as how the dual eligible demonstration project is implemented, and how health disparities are addressed. You can flip the next one. Let me go to the fourth slide. Then. Sorry. In Massachusetts, when we first got wind of all the changes that were going to be taking place in the state, we assembled a coalition of disability, elder, and healthcare advocacy groups to come together to work collaboratively to look at how we can be proactively involved in the process of shaping the dual eligibles initiative and other healthcare reform activities taking place in the state. There's 27 organizations, ranging from independent living centers to mental health consumer organizations. It's all cross-disability and cross-disability healthcare for All, which is an organization which primarily focuses on ethnic and racial populations, is at the table, and which is very important, as well as other groups that serve elders. We have a singular goal, and that is to make sure that people with disabilities receive the services that we require, and it be done with a contemporary understanding of disability. Slide. Yep, you can go to the next slide. I'm sorry. Okay. Guiding philosophy is that it has to be cross-disability. If one group suffers, then we all suffer. And so it's been very contentious around the table because most disability populations are siloed. So folks with mental health issues, folks in the DD world, folks on the DD, folks with physical disabilities, folks on folks with physical disabilities. And so we had to first come to a better understanding of each other as subpopulations within the population, within the disability community. And I will say that the folks in the DD population recused themselves from membership in DAR, and that was because of a difference in philosophical perception. We as a body decided that we wanted to make sure that long-term support services were integrated along with the medical delivery system, where the developmental disability folks, primarily ARC, they felt important that LTSS remains separate from medical care, from medical services provision. Okay. To cross disability, that the disablement model be central to this, that the recovery model for folks with mental health issues be central to this, that community integration be central to this. So we want to make sure that everything was required, not only in the least restrictive setting possible, but that all measures of quality and all data will also look at community involvement. So it's not just living in the community, but it's actually being active in the community. And then long-term support services, and what does long-term support services mean? We want long-term support services to be central to the system that's created and not an add-on. We came up with a set of 8 guiding principles that we worked on in consensus, which is interesting. As with you, first principle that we came up with was participant enrollment. CMS is pushing for passive enrollment with the opt-out ability. We are pushing for stridently with our executive office of Health and Human Services to ensure that there is active voluntary opt-in. And if we don't get this from our executive office of Human Services, that's okay, because while we're pushing for this, we're getting a lot of concessions along the way from the executive health and human services on how we can make sure that the 20% of the population receiving 20 20% of population with disabilities costing over 45% of the healthcare dollars are receiving the attention that they need as compared to the 80% of folks who are costing the system less than $20,000 a year. Okay. Person-centered care. Person-centered care for somebody with a disability has a very different meaning than it does for somebody who's able-bodied. Person-centered care for, in terms of our understanding, person-centered care includes the requirement that the person with a disability have the opportunity to choose their care team members and have an external person from the community as a member of the care team. So somebody from an independent living center, somebody from a recovery learning community, can be a part of that care team and advocate for that person, so the medical model doesn't subsume that person. Because most folks with disabilities really don't know what their rights are. You should flip to the next one. Thank you. Okay. Delivery system. The definition of medical home. For folks who are able-bodied, the medical home model may mean that there's a nurse practitioner on call, and that you call that nurse practitioner, says take two aspirin and call your primary care provider in the morning. Where for someone with an involved disability, it really requires a much more robust system. And a pretty good example would be that if someone has a quadriplegic is having a urinary tract infection and needs to go to the emergency room, that there'd be a nurse practitioner on call that knows that patient would be actually able to inform the emergency room that the person's coming in, and then so the emergency room would be prepared and that person get in and out of the emergency room as quickly as possible. So not coming in as this unknown entity. And so we want a really robust definition of medical home. Cultural competency and health disparities. There are several pieces of this. Cultural competency, we believe, begins with proof of compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act. So before any integrated care entity gets a contract from the state, we want to make sure that there's proof that they've actually complied with the Americans with Disabilities Act. And that's our baseline requirement. We also want to make sure that required of these integrated care entities is that they also address health disparities between folks with disabilities. So we'll compare data to just health disparities to ensure that folks with disabilities are receiving the same access to, or equitable access to health care as folks without disabilities, and that within the disability population, that they look at this by racial and ethnic minority status. Go to page 5. The next is prevention. We want to make sure that prevention services are central to this, and we're looking at both the CDC winnable battles, but also looking at prevention of secondary conditions. I'm sorry, what's consumer voice? Consumer voice. We're very lucky in Massachusetts. We've been sitting at the table with our Executive Office of Health and Human Services, with the Executive Secretary Bigby, and her staff on a regular basis. We have, over the course of the summer, had a meeting on a weekly basis or every other week basis with the entire staff going through piece by piece with what's being developed by the Executive Health and Human Services. And so we from the beginning have asked for a strong consumer voice. Strong consumer voice includes making sure that in the development of long-term support service systems, that integrated care entities that receive contracts from the state are required to contract with community-based organizations like ILCs or RLCs to show that they have the cultural competence to provide these services, provide services to people with disabilities. That there be an external ombudsman composed of a disability organization that would actually provide oversight of the integrated care entities as well as support people with disabilities who may be going through a contesting refusal of services. Financing mechanisms. We want to make sure that there's appropriate risk adjustment, and that includes not just looking at diagnoses, we're looking at functional stats, and this is something we really feel is critically important to how financing takes place. That if an integrated care entity is not able to include functional status, then they're not going to be able to really determine their cost structure. We also want to make sure that, as well as using aggregate data, that we use the individual's data from the previous year. Quality measures. In terms of quality measures, we want to use real-time quality measures and new systems. There's a dream model for folks with mental health issues that's out there. We want to make sure the quality measures have real meaning. And I'm not going to go through the list of quality measures that we're asking them to implement, but just say we have provided them with a deluge of information about quality measures and what we want to see in there. And they're assembling that right now at the Executive Office of Health and Human Services. Okay, next. Challenges. There's a tremendous amount at stake. What happens with dual eligibles in Massachusetts, and I'm sure this is nationally as well, will affect every other population in the state. We already know that what's happening with the dual eligibles initiative will impact elders in Massachusetts. So whatever is developed right now for people with disabilities will impact elders in the state, and most probably all folks on Medicaid in the state. Okay. Timeline for the dual demonstration project. The turnaround time on this is, crunch time has been extremely tight. All the states need to get their initial proposal into CMS by the end of November, I believe. And so we've been working since May until today, as I said, on a pretty brisk time frame, trying to get as much as we can from the disability perspective into what's being created. There are economic forces. The economy is really pushing for not for quality, but for cost reduction. And we're very concerned about cost reduction because what we see happening in other states or what will happen in Massachusetts is a one-size-fits-all model will be put in place, and that may decrease cost in the short run, but cost in the long run will increase. And we want to make sure that folks with disabilities, rather, who are not currently receiving services, who start receiving services, are going to cause a spike in the system, cost. The political forces are, we feel the administration needs to show that they're saving money and they're cutting costs. And so by doing that, they're putting pressure, I think undue pressure on states, focusing on numbers rather than on quality of services and rather than on population-specific services. And so rather than, as you were saying, Barbara, we want to make sure that if an integrated care entity wants to start up and provide services to folks with physical disabilities, they have the opportunity to do that. That if an entity wants to provide services to folks with mental health issues, they have the opportunity to do that. We don't want to see folks go into these HMOs by any other name. We want to make sure that they're very population specifically focused. A learning curve. The learning curve on the part of disability advocates and on the part of the Executive Office of Health and Human Services has been extremely steep as we try to come together to understand what the process they're trying to develop is and what the needs of our people with disabilities as a population. And Secretary Bigby, at our first meeting, had said, I'd given her an explanation of what we were looking for, and she said to me, that is, we all speak the same language, but that doesn't mean we all hear the same thing. And I was taken aback, and what the hell are you talking about? which she was saying, which was quite fair, was we don't all have the same understanding of what words mean. And from there, we've had extremely positive, at times tense, process. As we move forward, Monica's laughing because it has been tense. But what's held us together is a deep mutual respect between the disability community and our Executive Health and Human Services. And we're very lucky in that regard. Another challenge we've had is competing interests within stakeholder groups. we're holding together this coalition. I'm afraid to change it has been very difficult at times because everyone thinks their community is the most important one. And their interests are the most important one. And they're the most disenfranchised. And so it's keeping that tension alive is very good because it actually moves the process forward. We get a better, richer process and outcomes. But at the same time, we have to make sure that it doesn't go over to that point where one group feels like their voice is not being heard. The successes are as the coalition is holding together, and some of the folks that are most boisterous or blusterous about leaving are the ones that end up coming back and saying, okay, we'll stay. We remain at the table with UHHS, and I haven't gotten to a lot of the specifics of what we're asking for, because as you were saying, Barbara, it's a work in progress, so I don't want to say we've got promises for this, that, and that, because we haven't received the promises yet. We need to see the draft proposal that's going to be sent to CMS before we say yes, we like this, or yes, we've been heard. Our base has become more activated, which is phenomenal, so the folks around the state are becoming more interested in this, because it will impact them. We have legislation, we're not only working with the Executive Office of Health and Human Services, we're also working with the legislature. So what we don't get from the Executive Health and Human Services, we do hope that we might be able to get to the legislature. And it's not just a short-term, we're not only seeking legislative protection in the short run, but the long run. Because if the administration changes, and the staff changes in the EOHHS, regulations can change very quickly. It's a lot more difficult to change laws than it is to change regulations. So that's why we want those protections put in place. We're going to be setting up a meeting, we hope, with providers and people with disabilities so that we can come to some sense of what we would like to see within whatever healthcare system is created. Because we do believe that there are places of commonality, and that if we don't sit at the table together, we're really not going to come up with a healthcare system we'd like. We don't want large national chains coming into Massachusetts and providing healthcare services. We want to make sure that there are innovative programs that take place. Ask for the kitchen sink. We've said from the beginning that we're going to ask for the kitchen sink, and if all we get out of the process is a washer, then we will have gotten out more than we would have had we not engaged in the process from the beginning. And so that's the other thing. Yeah. So I can give more specifics about the process and folks' investments. Thank you.